What's a fang banger?
Hello and welcome to Fang Bangers Podcast. We're chaotic, horny friends rewatching the chaotic, horny HBO series True Blood.
I'm Lozzie.
I'm Melissa.
I'm Tasia.
And I'm Elise.
So, intro done.
Yes, intro done.
Podcast over.
Podcast over. We're going to get into, at least the four of us right now, our True Blood origin stories. But I think just a note for future episodes that we did mention in the intro that this is a chaotic podcast. And it's so chaotic that there is not a permanent host. So we are here for this first episode. And next week, there will be another combination of hosts, another True Blood origin story, and we'll just go from there. So you should not expect anything from this podcast.
Well, and hopefully this prevents you from getting bored with any of us, right?
Yes. The only thing you should expect is chaos and horny content. Okay.
And laughs.
And laughs. Agreed.
I mean, even if we're not making you laugh, we will be laughing ourselves.
It's about you.
Really, this is about, yeah.
This is about us. Okay, so let's get into our True Blood origin stories.
I'll go first. I mean, I think I'll also talk about like our group origin story, which is that we all sort of vaguely met through another chaotic, horny show and the internet fandom thereof, which was Game of Thrones. In terms of mine with True Blood, I'm extremely upset to realize that I was 28 when this came out. I was for sure like I must have been at uni or something, but no. I was backing this up from the internet in case the internet ever lost its files and needed to come back to me to find out where its files were. And I'd just wanted to watch vampire shows. I read a lot of Anne Rice at uni, watched a lot of Buffy, watched a lot of Angel, which is better than Buffy. And I was just horny for vampires. And I didn't realize just how horny for vampires this show was either.
We're going to talk about that Angel Buffy thing later.
Yeah, but... I'm waiting for that. I'm so excited that, I'm not to preempt anyone, but that we have like a couple of Buffy people on our rotation.
Yeah, right. I was weirdly thinking about Buffy a lot during this first episode because there are very interesting like teenage to adult kind of parallels there. But yeah, it'll be fun to track that. I guess I'll go next since I'm already talking. So I watched True Blood as it aired way back when. I probably was like 28-ish. I don't know. You're like a little bit older than me. Yeah, I guess the earlier 20s. But yeah, I watched it as it aired. And I remember just like the pure chaos, especially of every end scene. Like the episodes always end on this like absolute balls to the wall cliffhanger. And like... a banging needle drop, and then you're just left for like the rest of the week just freaking the fuck out. And that was what really, I think, made True Blood really fun, was just, yeah, the absolute madness of it.
By the way, if you didn't realize, this podcast will contain swearing and mature content, as indeed does the show.
Yeah, maybe put the kids down for a nap and then listen.
Put the kids down forever.
Wow. At least starting off by trying to murder both Tasia and my children. So not together, but you know.
That'd be a lot of like work to get them together so you could just like, you know, two birds, one stone, or I guess three birds, one stone.
I couldn't tell Lozzie was saying that the children like didn't know each other, or that you didn't have them together.
Both of those things are accurate.
Great.
Yeah, so I will just say this the once. I was in high school when the show started. Did not watch it until probably the third season, maybe the second season. I don't exactly remember how I started watching True Blood, but I was dating someone my first couple years of college who was also very into assisting the internet in case it also, you know, lost its files. So there was a lot of TV that I suddenly had access to, just, you know, in service to the internet at large. So I became immediately obsessed with the show, and I blew through all of it that was available. Obviously, the theme song went on every single mix CD I made for like 3 straight years.
100%.
It's definitely
never skip. We
never skip. And you know, folks will say like, "Oh, what's your, you know, the song you hear in your head after the HBO like intro sound, and for a lot of people I know it's Game of Thrones, and for me it's 100% True Blood forever. It'll never be anything else. And I've read most of the books. I intend to reread them as we do this. We'll see. I know that they end up going like way off track. So we'll see.
Fortunately, the show does not.
Yeah, exactly. we'll see once that happens if I keep reading the book. But yeah, I'm very excited.
I was a huge fan of 6 Feet Under, which was Alan Ball's previous show on HBO. So I was always going to watch this. And like Tasia, I also watched it when it first aired. It's actually a show my ex and I watched together. That thankfully, even after we broke up, like, I think only one season was left, like, after we broke up. And I was like, I'm not quitting this show for just the one season. I didn't read all of the books right away, but I think there was, like, 1 year where I just literally just read all of them. And I think that season 1 through 4 kind of, like, is with the books, and then that's afterwards when it kind of splits. And seasons 1 through 4 are probably my favorite. But yeah, I just love it. It was one of the first shows I remember watching that just like had all different types of people in it. Like there were, I mean, religious folks, there's queer folks, there's like everyone in it. And I just really enjoy that ensemble and seeing how everyone interacts with each other. But yeah, love it, and watched it all the way through. Although towards the end, wasn't sure how I managed.
I know, I was going to say, you maybe could have dropped it in that last season and been okay.
Yeah, I think at that point I was like, I'm just going to finish this. I still have like a little bit of trauma about the last episode. I actually don't even like where the books ended up either, but it was a different
Yeah, it's bad in a different
ending.
Way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I have not read the books, but yeah, maybe a good idea to read along with the rebook.
Yeah, there's like 13 books, I think, and it's a lot.
They're an easy breezy. Oh, yeah, I think totally. It was like a week and a half in the middle, somewhere in the middle of my True Blood, like the show airing. I just like sat and read all of the books.
Yeah, and, I think I read all of them, like, as they came. I read all of the ones available, and then, like, a couple of them I read, like, as they came out later on.
Yeah.
My Kindle told me that this first book was going to take me 5 hours to read.
They're not very long, huh?
That is going to be...
Yeah.
Doorstoppers, they are not.
The audiobook is, like, about 9 and change, but I'm listening to it at, like, 1.2 or something.
We should probably also note, we don't intend this to be a very spoilery podcast. We will probably have a section at the end where we talk about book-specific things and any spoiler-specific things that we noted. But broadly, we're intending, when we discuss each episode, that we'll be spoiling up to and including that episode, but nothing further.
Yeah, we'll be really clear if there's something that's from coming up later, or something that makes us remember something that happened later. Because to be honest... my brain's empty, and I probably won't remember something from the future episode unless someone tells me it.
Yeah, I know I finished the show, but I actually, other than being like, oh, that's a bad ending, I, like, do not really remember the specifics of how everything ended up, which I think is fun.
I only have one memory of the ending of the show, and it is a visual memory of a certain character that we have not yet met in the snow reading a book.
Well, of course. I remember that. And I also remember them using one of my favorite songs in the last episode, but I won't even say what that is because I don't want to spoil it.
We're not there yet. We're on season one, episode one. This episode is called Strange Love, and it aired on September 7th, 2008, and it was written and directed by Alan Ball. I'll just read us a little synopsis, and then we can get into all of the happenings in Bon Tom. So, 2 years after vampires have come out of the coffin, get it? Happy Pride.
No, I don't get it, but I'm explaining it to me.
The life of 25-year-old waitress Sookie Stackhouse has changed when 173-year-old Bill Compton walks into Merlot's Bar and Grill in Bon Toms, Louisiana. Meanwhile, Sookie's friend Tara Thornton comes to work at Merlot's as well, while Sookie's tomcatting brother, Jason Stackhouse, finds himself on the wrong side of the law.
Could you explain to me what tomcatting is, as I'm a poor Englishman?
Yes.
slut.
Or did you? Oh, sorry, Elise was just lost her mind at me saying the word tomcatting.
Tomcatting. It is a man slut.
Man slut.
He's whoring it up a little.
Fine, yeah.
Good. Well.
He's very insistent. Like, he's very much a swerf, though. Like, he's.
I honestly have never heard the term tomcat used as any sort of, I don't know, like, grammar that well, but like verb or like whatever.
Yeah.
It's sort of an antiquated term, I think. Like, it's not really in popular use anymore. Yeah. Maybe in like the 50s.
Like, what a tomcat is. And I can use my context clues because I know what happens with barn cats.
Okay.
So you end up with 14,000.
You know, full disclosure, we grabbed the little summary from the True Blood Wikipedia, and now I'm like, who wrote this?
Was it Bill Compton?
Oh yeah. that tracks.
Oh my god. What if the whole Wikipedia is like written in his point of view?
That would actually be amazing.
That would be really like funny.
Every page.
I use the True Blood Wikipedia as well for part of my notes for this episode, but I think that I'll mention it when we get there because I have a little definition that I would like to share with the class, but it'll be coming. It'll be coming later.
I'm very curious.
This show, this episode, and because it's the pilot, this show opens directly with sex. We are introduced to this couple and the woman is driving and she gets bored, so she's like, let me just give you a hand job while I'm bored, like, this is fine. And they're obviously in the country and they, you know, veer off the side of the road to go to like, it's called Grab It Quick, which is a little Easter egg from the book because the book mentions that Tara used to work at Grab It Quick, and so I was like, that's funny, good production design. But yeah, they pull over, they pause a hand job so that they can try to procure some of this synthetic blood, True Blood, so that they could try it. And they get into a little altercation with the clerk. He like plays a prank on them that he's the vampire, but it is a really fun switcheroo because there is an actual vampire there and he's very mad that there is like some stolen vampire valor going on here.
Well, I love that that like flip from like the stereotype or what you're expecting is like that, you know, goth looking dude behind the counter is definitely the vampire. He's playing the vampire. He's got the accent, but then who really turns out to be the vampire is some, you know, redneck ass dude wearing camo. Just like your very average dude in the South. And he's actually the vampire. So I love, and I think what this show does, like this pilot episode does, is like just a really efficient way of like telling you exactly what the show is. Mm-hmm. Like in the beginning, like within 20 seconds, you're getting a hand job and you're like, okay, now I know what kind of show this is. Like right off the bat, this shows you it's going to be flipping your expectations on like vampire lore and expectations in that kind of way. And I just think this pilot episode works so efficiently at showing us exactly what we're getting into and exactly who all of these characters are. I feel like by the end of this episode, I have such like a clear understanding of who everybody is.
Yeah, that stuck out to me really too.
I mean, I think on top of that, like just as an intro, like as a pre-credits, setting up the world in 2 minutes basically is fantastic. You also have the speaker for the Vampire Nation, Nan Flanagan, on a Bill Maher talk show. Just giving him a little bit of like coming out of the coffin and talking about what True Blood is. It's a synthetic Japanese made blood that means that vampires don't have to feed on humans. And then, as you said, you get the horniness and you get the confounded expectations of your own, you know, assumptions of what a vampire is, a goth guy versus as you say, like a redneck guy.
Mm-hmm. I like the unsubtlety about coming out of the coffin as being like a metaphor for coming out of the closet. And they do a really good job in this show of talking about vampires in a way that people have talked about queer folks and their rights to live.
Right, it's like a civil rights movement.
To. Exactly. And I think to go back to the scene at the beginning with the goth guy and then the redneck guy, it's like basically the fact that the redneck guy was the one that was vampire was really interesting because it just is like, okay, anyone could be gay. Like it's not, you don't have to look a certain way or act
a costume.
Way.
And
exactly. It's just, this is your life and this is who you are. And I always thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I really like that. The scene, it because it's just a news program we're watching through the TV at the Grab It Quick, but I really like that they take the time in the first episode to ask you point blank, like, are vampires worse than humanity? Let's think about it. Like, yes. And I just love her that she's like, where's the receipts? And it's like, okay, well, obviously there aren't going to be any. I see what you're doing. But yeah, I really love that. And I also love that they, right in this first scene, this is like a cold open for the show. They introduce the idea that like the blood sharing goes both ways, which is that vampire blood in this universe is a drug to humans. So yeah, I mean, that's basically the setup, I mean, for the show and especially for this episode, which because the theme song drops right after the scene and it is a fucking banger, a killer.
Yeah. There are so few shows where it's like a never skip intro, and this is a top never skip intro. Never. I was same as you, Melissa. Like, I had this song on so many playlists.
I had this theme song on a mixtape that had a dubstep remix of the Dexter theme song. And so those two things are like interlinked.
This is the most on brand
ever. I know. Yes. It's disgusting.
I was going to say earlier that my HBO, like, the theme song that comes to mind after the HBO logo was always The Sopranos for me. Mm-hmm. But this was definitely a close second.
Well, we're going to just ruin that with this rewatch.
Yeah, right. Mm.
It's so good. Like, it's so good as a theme song. It gives you flavor of the locale, the actual credits that are attached to it, the visuals that are attached to it are extremely compelling as well. You've got like kids dressed up in clan uniforms, you've got baptisms, you've got alligators, you know, it's really giving you a sense of where the show is, what its geography is, as well as being a fucking banger.
Yeah, it's such like a good animals. Like condensed like look at what the South is and the different cultures and everything that influenced the overall culture of the South. I think it's just
I am from the South picture. Myself, so I agree.
Very accurate, you find it?
Yeah, like this is exactly what Surrey and Middlesex are just like, so.
I thought so.
Okay, do we want to get into the episode? So we start off at a bar, opening a bar called Merlot's, and we meet Sookie Stackhouse, who is a waitress who overhears people's thoughts, and she insists that she's not a psychic. But do we have another word for that that isn't
telepath?
Telepath, right?
Yeah.
So she overhears the various sort of goings on and boring tidbits of people's lives as she walks around with her patrons. Because she basically reads their minds and then answers them, they wonder if she's reading their minds. She's not very subtle with the fact that she reads people's minds. She is being somewhat creepily watched by Sam Merlot. And and that gives us our very sort of brief, it's quite a punchy first scene, actually. There's an awful lot of quite short scenes in this pilot episode that do a very good job, again, of just giving us a very quick intro to who each of these characters are, what motivates them, and what they're sort of interacting with. We then cut to, I'm going to call it a DIY shop, but you'll have to tell me what you call it in the States. And Tara is working there. I say working there. She's just sat on a garden chair reading Naomi Klein. A customer comes in who wants something that they can't tell her what it actually is. She picks a fight with Tara, and Tara picks a fight right back with her, and then basically quits in lieu of getting fired, which she probably wouldn't have been fired, but or maybe she would have been, but she clearly just doesn't want to work there. So she calls Sookie, who's her best friend. She drops that that Sam is in love with Sookie.
She calls Sookie on a Razor phone. I just think that's important to know.
I had one of those.
I had that phone.
I definitely had that phone. You guys brag.
I wanted that phone. I know, right?
Shit, me too.
To be fair, I think I got like my dad's like leftover one. Like he got a new phone and I got that, so it wasn't even like it wasn't a new one. I'm not helping. You're probably still jealous.
No, it was cool. It's fine.
I would say that Tara works at like a Walmart equivalent. That's kind of what I.
Well, like, I think maybe, if it is like a Big Lots, but yeah, like, totally.
Oh yeah, Big Lots or like even I don't know, like a lower scale like Lowe's or Home Depot or something. Kind of like a DIY maybe like type a place.
Like a local like Ace Hardware or whatever.
She says the name of the store, or she's like riffing on the name of the store when she says it, because it kind of does sound like she's fucking with the woman when she says welcome to, you know, whatever she says, but I actually didn't write down what she said the name of the store.
Yeah, me neither. But I mean like 90% of the time Tara is fucking with people, so
Tara is one of this life's best characters. I absolutely adore her. But yeah, I mean, to what you said earlier, just by this point we've been introduced to so many of these characters, and like we know that like Arlene has these kids, so that is like her main motivation. We could tell from our own perception, and also Tara confirmed that Sam is in love with Sookie, and we learn that Tara's a hothead, and we meet more characters in this episode, and the show does a good job of setting them up as well. But it's just, I mean, we've already said this word, but it is so efficient. It's so good.
Yeah.
Because Go ahead.
I was gonna say, we see that Sookie seems like a very sweet person. Like she has no time for people's bullshit, which I appreciate. And I think hearing people's thoughts kind of makes it where she reacts probably faster than someone that wouldn't hear people's thoughts. Because if you don't hear all the shitty things people are thinking, then maybe you'll be giving them a little more grace. But like, she also says a few times in the episode that she has no sex life. So I think it's really hard for her to date having that ability to hear people's thoughts. So that's
why I think it sets up that romance really, really well, like that potential romance, by showing that she cannot hear Bill's thoughts, so he immediately becomes like an oasis for her, like immediately. And very she's so drawn to him because he represents like peace of mind. She can finally be alone with her own thoughts and just kind of interact with somebody in a more honest way, because when you know what somebody's thinking, it is gonna, like, no matter how much you're trying to block that, it is gonna color your interactions with them and how you respond to things that they say, because you know like their true motivations. There's no mystery or excitement or any like naturalness to a conversation when you can hear people's thoughts.
She gets into the specifics of that in the book. She says, you know, the times that she has had to have relationships with you know, regular Southern human men, it's like, think about if you could hear all the things your partner was thinking about during sex with you. Like, it would be terrible. And she lists a couple examples, and they are terrible. And so that is like, why she has no sex.
Like, comments on her body and that kind of thing.
Right.
They use the R word, like the script. I'm sure that the people who live in Bon Tom say a bunch of fucking horrible shit, but the one that I hear them say in this episode is the R word about Sookie, and I don't like the use of it, but it really does. It's very much of this show's time, but it very much tells us exactly how Sookie is perceived by the town. So Sookie is like, It would be kind of wild to know someone like Sookie in real life and not be close to her, because she obviously has something going on, but she is like so friendly, but there has to just, because you see her in this first episode multiple times, just like staring off into space. It's like basically like she's just glitching out. And so
there's a couple times where she's like trying to center herself and like tune everything out. Like, that is like did happen a couple times,
but it makes total sense that Sookie would be so excited to finally meet her first vampire, to finally meet someone who is not outwardly but definitely, you know, different than the rest of the population, and someone who would understand like the ostracization that she's experienced.
I mean, the characters who use that word as well are the rat trays, right? Like, they're the worst. So we're supposed to realize that they're the worst by the use of it as well. But also, like, Sookie, and we'll come on to another character that she meets and then it talks to, is like, she also explains that She wears makeup to get better tips, and she also acts dumb to get better tips. So sometimes she's a little bit spacey, and sometimes she's deliberately spacey for money. Yeah. And she tells this to Lafayette, who is the cook, and quite a sort of demure, quiet character. Doesn't really say. So yeah. if Tara is Melissa's favorite character, I think Lafayette is my favorite character.
Lafayette and one other that we haven't been introduced to yet, but yeah, Lafayette's way up there.
Lafayette and Tara, do we find out their relationship yet here? I can't remember if we...
I mean, let's
I don't think it. They said it, but
it's
yeah.
I don't think it's a spoiler it's to not. Say that they're cousins.
They're cousins.
We have two black people and they're related.
Right. Here's a book spoiler for you, which we'll talk about it again once we get to the point where this happens. I believe it is in the second book that Lafayette actually dies, but he is such a fan favorite character that the show was like, absolutely fucking not.
Yeah. I think he died, like the cliffhanger of the first book, I feel like, is Lafayette dying. But yeah. I'm so glad they made some very smart changes from book to show, like all throughout, but that was probably the best one.
One of the best ones. I agree. But yeah, Lafayette is so like wonderful, extremely himself. No apologies for that. And that is just something that I find I'm drawn to that, to a character like that a lot.
He's also like he's gay, by the way, if people didn't realize this. I can't imagine anyone's listening to this who doesn't see the show, but he is so confidently sexual in his communication and his refusal to act in any other way that if he were not, would be fucking horrible, but somehow just works with an unbelievable volume of charm and his confidence of just flirting with and aggressively flirting with and chatting up every single possible person in the entire restaurant.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, especially like when you consider the risk he puts himself in by existing, first of all, but by doing it loudly in the place where he is, where he lives, he's a special character.
It's also hysterical, especially in the time of the show and the time that the show's portraying, that he says every man, gay, straight, and George W. Bush is terrified of the pussy. But
he's
like
not wrong.
To call out George W. Bush specifically just puts this in such a specific place and time. It just really, really got a good chuckle out of me today.
I mean,
the episode came
out like a couple months before the election where like Obama came into was elected. So I don't remember if I saw that the pilot was maybe written the year before. So it was definitely like well into the George W. Bush presidency. It was a time over here.
We again another shortcut jump across to tits, and
there's a lot of tits.
Is a lot of tits. So we cut between a television. I didn't have no idea what the hell that television show was, and a naked girl watching the television who is being eaten out by Jason Stackhouse. He notices that she has vampire bite marks and is frankly a bit of a judgy prick about it, and is talks about like he never pays for sex, which is like whatever, mate. And then
what am I supposed to do, turn down $1,000?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah
absolutely.
She's like, I didn't pay for sex, I paid to be bitten and then have sex,
and she's like, that's so easy, I would do it again.
Yeah,
I would let a vampire bite me for
$500. For free!
I know. Yeah, exactly. I mean, for real, for free. But if I'm trying to make a buck, then a buck, you know?
As long as I had a promise I wouldn't... I like, you know, please don't turn me into a vampire yet. Let me know you first a little bit so I can decide if that's the way I want to go.
I mean, I would get that in writing, but not that you could do much after.
I'll get it in blood.
Anyway, again, like pretty quick scene. Jason is a fucker in every sense of the word, and
honestly, Ryan Kwanten might not be like one of his generation's best actors, but he is absolutely a gift. And I honestly think that he is pretty good in this show as Jason Stackhouse, because you can like tell in his face that he is like a little
alarmed and
kind of concerned, but also very into the idea that Maudette has, you know, rough sex is what she's like, which is like, whatever.
I mean, but, she had a whole hook situation.
I know she did.
There's definitely a sense where he's into it and like mad at himself for being into
and you
it. So
therefore,
and then putting that judgment on her because 100%.
So they watch the video.
They watch the video. He gets a blowjob whilst they watch the video, and he looks up and sees the hook that was being used in the video. The hook and chain as well.
And he's like, I could be into a hook. You wanna?
I think it's so funny that Maudette was like, I kind of like it rough. She had a whole fucking setup. Like, girl, don't pretend.
And it's like, how
she's all sometimes.
It's just come to me that maybe.
It's like Jason's feelings are hurt thinking. That he like didn't know this about her, and finds out that this is like, oh, an actual serious interest of hers because she's got the hardware just permanently in her living room.
Yeah,
I know that took.
I just happened to have
commitment.
A hook, chains, and a regular video recording setup that I use for play-by-play analysis of future.
So here's my question. Do you think she set all of this at, like, Power Tools and everything, or did she outsource this? Was there some sort of, like, task rabbit or that she got somebody to come in her house and just made some excuse for why she wanted a giant hook and chains in her ceiling?
Like, I sort of wondered if... It seems like her relationship with the vampire actually wasn't like this, but I did kind of wonder, like, oh, I wonder if the vampire installed that and then just, like, left it there
for her. He's a very handy vampire.
You think that came out of the $1,000 she got?
Yeah.
I think she went on How to Build a Sex Room, even though it didn't exist yet, which is a lovely Netflix show. But it does seem like...
A lot of YouTube videos.
Yeah, I feel like she probably figured out how to do it herself, or like had like maybe some sort of like ex-husband that did it.
Yeah,
I do. And one thing I will say about this, and this is about the time also, like 2008, like everyone talks about Maudette like she's a piece of trash, which I don't love. This was also true in the book. They just act like they kept saying like, oh, Jason could get someone better than her. And like clearly like. He fucked her. So
Jason sleeps with everyone.
That kind of bothers me.
Yeah.
He doesn't give a fuck.
But they just
talk
about
everyone
her.
Who's not Tara, basically.
Right.
I just feel like they're very judgy in this town about
they
people
are.
That do have sex. And I think that that's just something I have to remember about the show as we go forward.
I mean, I think that is 100% like part of the show deliberately, right? Like,
I
understand.
The contrast between the sort of outwardly judgy, and Sookie can be a bit like this as well, versus like the, you know, outrageously sexual behavior in in a workplace between all the waiters and Lafayette and all around the place. So like, I don't know exactly what Alan Ball's trying to say with it, but he's trying to say
something. Because he's definitely showing women like Maudette that are shamed for their activities and for like their supposed character, but also showing characters like I just watched this episode too. What was the other waitress's name? The one that hooks up with Jason?
Oh, Dawn.
Oh, I forget her name.
Dawn. So they show Dawn, and everyone is very clearly aware of her sexual activities and proclivities, but nobody seems to think badly about her. For them. So yeah, we're definitely seeing like so I'm wondering like where is the Maudette hate coming from? And I think it might be even just a little bit of a classist thing and maybe a little
That's
bit of pretty privilege.
I was
going to
say
some pretty privilege there too,
because
Dawn is you know, Dawn looks like Dawn and Maudette looks like a regular woman who is still very attractive and still, you know, stand, you know, your beauty standards, but
I don't mean this negatively from my perspective, but she's a little, maybe a little more weathered. Looks like she'd been through some shit, I guess.
Yeah, and I think that comes down to a class thing too, probably, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah.
But she was, like, they say that Maudette was at school with, like, Sookie and Tara as well, right? So she does, she looks at, weathered is a good phrase, but...
I basically just have to get my mind where I get my mind for Veronica Mars, because this came out around the same time, and there's some, I mean, on that end, it's not like, that's like everyone's judgmental in that show, and I don't think it's to prove a point, but like I just think the things I watch nowadays don't have that kind of element in it, so I just have to get my brain on the right page.
Yeah.
Anyway, we jump back to Merlot's, and Tara's drinking her big margarita that she's insisted on earlier. Sam is smarmy as hell, and suddenly we get quiet, and we see Sookie look over, and vampire Bill Compton is in the room. He sits in her section, and she is giddy as fuck. She's so excited that there's a vampire there. She sort of stutteringly introduces herself, and Bill is like, "Can I have some True Blood?" And she's like, "We don't have any. We got some a year or two ago, and it went bad." So he asks for a glass of wine that he doesn't drink. Again, like, really efficient. We've had, what, like 5 scenes? We've introduced 7-8 key characters already and get a sense for everyone's relationship to everyone else. Like, efficiency is really the watchword on this pilot, as well as horniness.
This is not a really important change, but it reminded me, like, in the book, the reason that they didn't have the True Blood was not like, oh, we had it a year ago and no one used it. It was oh, it's on order, it'll be here in a week. It was like a different excuse, and I just thought that was funny because it's so like unimportant. Like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
like, I think that it is a, it's like, it's basically insignificant, but I actually think that the fact of the change is interesting for the show because no spoilers, but it paints Sam in like a specifically like progressive light. Like, when vampires came out, he was prepared to have them at his bar, and I think that will become more interesting as we learn more about Sam.
That's fair.
Yeah, I think that is a very interesting like, again, efficient kind of look at who Sam is too, where he's this performatively kind of progressive person. Like, yes, really, I support vampire rights. She's like, I know for a fact that he voted in favor of, you know, vampire rights and inclusion and all of this. But then the second a vampire shows up, he is immediately on guard. He's immediately like, he's not allowed to touch this girl that I have put my own, you know, I have set my own sights on. Like, you can see like how performative his like supposed allyship is.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem specifically Sookie related as well. Like, his obsession with Sookie is
I mean, I saw that definitely, but I didn't think of it from the perspective of like the True Blood being available or not available, but it makes a lot of sense.
Because I also read the first chapter of the book today, that's like the first chapter of this book is so similar to the first episode. Like, it there's only a few changes. And this is one of them, so it happened to stand out.
I don't remember Lafayette and Tara being really in the first chapter.
I don't think that they are.
That is a different, another change. Like, they made them more prominent.
No, like, spoilers, but in the books, Tara doesn't really, you know, I mean, we know Lafayette dies, but Tara isn't as close to Sookie in the books as she is in the show.
And I think it's really good. I think that's a good change because I love both of those characters
and
so
much.
And I
love their friendship.
It's like, really important for Sookie to have that, I think. Yeah.
That stood out to me during this rewatch too, especially when Tara calls Sookie, hey, I quit my job. And Sookie's like, another one? Like, I think that you need to keep your mouth shut. Like,
yeah. In the books, I think she's closer with Arlene, I think.
Yeah,
I really like her interactions with Tara, actually. I think it really sets her apart because she's quite meek in a lot of the other sort of interactions she has. And she just does not take shit from Tara, which Tara absolutely needs someone who doesn't take shit from her.
For me, it shows that they're like more than good friends. Like, they're family almost that is how my friends that I know really well, and like, I'm going to talk shit to you, to your face, in ways I wouldn't with someone I know less. And if like, you're being stupid, I'm going to tell you. So, like, family.
We all need those friends.
Anyway, Bill ends up sharing a booth with the Rattrays, who are awful, as we discussed earlier. And Sookie, reading their minds, realizes they're going to try and bleed him dry again. Like, this is a callback to the intro where they talk about vamp blood and it being a drug for humans and being able to sell it, in this case in Dallas, I think. Sookie is like, we have to save him, we have to protect him, and no one, specifically Sam and Tara, want anything to do with it. Again, very performative comments from Sam, particularly about it. We also see Jason basically recreating the video that Mordet was doing with the vampire with him, and we see it being recorded as well. And then we cut to Bill sort of lying on the ground, his wrists and neck being covered with a silver chain. The rat is bleeding him out. I'll be honest, and I'm not sure how often this happens later in the show, it feels remarkably stupid of Bill to fall for this. And it feels remarkably weak of him to be able to trap like this.
I think that that's
I have spoilery notes about this.
We don't see them get him. You know, like, you just have to kind of... There was no way that they were going to be able to, like, show the rat trace taking Bill out there to us this early in the show, and for us to ever, like,
take vampires seriously as a threat. Yes,
exactly. Mm-hmm. I was trying to think of, like, a nice way to say that. I didn't want to say, like, we'll never respect Bill again. But I have to assume that he didn't want to cause a scene at the bar because he's into Sookie and he wants to make a home here. And so I kind of, my headcanon is that they just, like, wrapped his wrist with the chain so he was, like, in pain, and it became like, if you want to get out of this, a scene will need to be made and it will be better to be made outside. But yeah, I mean, it really gets away from him very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe he's, like, depleted. We don't know when's his last true blood.
That's true, yeah. And he's obviously clearly not trying to, like, overstep in any way, because he knows that people are already against him just for what he is. So he's probably gonna err on the side of, like, caution and restraint. But also, it really reminds me of, like, the end of Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, where Daniel Craig is, like, about to escape from this guy's mansion, and he, like, lures him back in by, you know, niceties and convinces him to stay because he's, you know, otherwise if he were to leave it would be rude. And then the guy he has him, like, chained up basically, and he's like, you could have left, but you wanted to be polite. Like, that's,
you know, now
you've put yourself in that position because you were more scared of seeming rude than of me when you knew what I was. So that feels kind of like a similar
I think it's an interesting point about how recently he's had blood as well, because he does look gaunt and, like, he looks more like a classic vampire in this.
Eyeliner and all.
He's so ill, and wonder if this is, like, an interest of mine that stuck around after I saw True Blood for the first time.
Ill dirty boys.
I know.
Like, I think the whole thing tracks to what Melissa was saying about him, like, not wanting to make a scene, and Tasia saying he didn't want to be rude, because he says later in the episode to Sookie, like, I would like this to be my home. I care about what people think about me here. I mean, he flat out says that to her. So I think that all makes a lot of sense as to why he let them take him outside.
Yeah. Anyway, Sookie interrupts them with another hook and chain from a car. A lot of hooks and chains in the southern U.S., guys. You're going to have to talk to me.
You have no idea.
I've never had a hook or a chain. Like, maybe I need to, like, go buy them or something.
Okay. Road trip.
The book makes a point. The book Sookie makes a point multiple times about how pissed Jason's going to be about losing this train out of his truck. And I just have to assume it's because him and his friends get drunk and go off roading and have to get their trucks pulled out, like, every night.
Probably.
Yeah. Or do we think Jason uses that hook and chain?
He's just like, the
hook and chain in the ceiling. I've never seen one of these before.
We've seen that the kink scene in the South is just thriving. So,
yeah.
All of the above.
Anyway, she basically beats the rat race off and saves Bill. And the rat race, we find out, are dangerous people not to be fucked with, apparently. Although, whatever.
First for V.
Yeah. And anyway, that's when she realizes that she can't read Bill's mind. And again, is giddy as fuck about it.
It's so hot. Every time Bill is like, what are you? I don't know, man. You tell me.
I'm a waitress.
Yeah, I'm just a waitress. We're just men. We're just innocent waitresses.
I'm sorry. The "we're just innocent men" will never fail to make me laugh.
The fact that Anna Paquin and Stephen Moyer are still married brings me so much joy.
I know.
Yeah. Yes. The chemistry is real and it is long lasting.
Yeah, it is great.
They've got like 3 kids together, yes, as well, right?
Twins.
Yeah, amazing.
I love them. I think about them quite often, actually.
Me too. I definitely think about the fact that they're married a lot in the later scenes because, like, yeah, that's it.
I find it remarkable that the Anna Paquin, who's New Zealander, is basically most famous for playing 2 Southern women, as far as I'm concerned, in X-Men and in this. And Stephen Moyer, who's British, you've got 2 absolutely non-Southerners. I assume they're pulling off pretty reasonable Southern accents here, guys, but you'll have to tell me.
I mean, I wouldn't know. I've lived as south as Virginia, and that was a little bit different than where,
yeah,
they're living.
I can't say for sure, but it works for me 100%.
Yeah, I'm amused.
It does feel like a very general southern accent. But I know that there's, like, you know, Louisiana, like different areas, they all have their own accents. But I feel like for me, for somebody who is not from the South, it works just fine.
We realize that at this point that they don't know each other's names. Or she doesn't know. Yeah, because, like, they have this extremely hot moment where she's, like, I mean, in ecstasy, basically, just at the absence of people's thoughts. Like, she's with someone, but she can't hear their thoughts. It's amazing. But they talk about their names, and she cracks up laughing because his name's Vampire Bill. She's, like, beside herself, hysterical. But specifically, one of her assumptions of what his name could be is Basil, which is the name
I know,
of one
I
of
love
our
I thought I totally
vampires.
Thought about you.
Lost my mind.
I forgot that Basil was one of the things that she says, and it just is so good.
It was so good.
Lots so, do we think this confirms Rainbow Rowell is a True Blood watcher?
100%.
I think it does.
100%.
Laz, I don't know if you know Rainbow Rowell's book series, Carry On, Wayward Son, and
I have seen the cover. Blues. I have not read them.
The main
that hot black-haired vampire on that cover is named Basil.
Basil. Okay. Where were we? Oh yeah. So Sookie saves Bill. Jason rocks up at the bar post-coitally, looking for his hook and chain, I presume.
Post-coitally.
I'm sorry. I'm classy.
I just loved picturing, like, a post-coital. Like, how does one walk post-coitally?
Depends what
a little bit
position
bow-legged?
One is. I think everyone's response to that tells you more about them than it does about anything.
I'm going to shut up then.
Tara, who is an absolute hard ass with everyone, is insufferably insipid with Jason because she has such a crush on him. And he leaves with Dawn instead, showing zero interest in Tara.
I don't even think he left with Dawn. I think Dawn ditched him. Didn't she?
Well, he followed Dawn out. I think
he follows her out. Like,
he tried to ditch him in public and then probably let him come home anyway.
Yeah, I think
it
was.
I would have done the same thing.
Mm-hmm. I like the way Dawn plays with Jason, though, telling him, like, oh, I have no expectations of you. Like,
yeah.
I think my favorite Dawn and Jason interaction in this episode was when they're on the phone and he's like, oh, what can I say? I'm hot. And she's like, I'm hot too. And he's like, oh, yeah, yes. I know. Like, I love that, you know, he.
Yeah.
He can't wield this, like, sexual prowess over her because she's just as bad as him. You know, like, they're both baddies. Like,
she's definitely.
I'm hot and I'm a slut too. So
she's definitely capable of leading him around by the nose, and
by the chain.
Yeah, by the chain. Yeah. So he presumably follows her and wonders why his chain and hook aren't in his trailer. Then Sookie goes home and we get to meet her grandma, who's a lovely old Southern lady, she tells her a little bit about Bill, and then goes to bed and has a sex stroke biting dream about Bill.
I love that in the dream she's like, I didn't expect that we were going to have sex so fast.
I know, as she's taking off her jacket. I love it.
She's just like, yeah, I'm so like this. Please, no.
Gran then, is my favorite. I love her, just to give her like a couple minutes. She's so sweet. And I love how Suki is really, you know, like some people treat their, she loves her Gran so much, but some people talk to their grandparents like they're not real people and don't have like real opinions on things. I think like this might be more about me. Like I was never that close with my grandparents. So like, I could not imagine having a conversation with any of my grandparents being like, yeah, this vampire came in and it was really sweet and great and blah, blah, blah. Like I love that she has that with mm-hmm. her grandmother because that is not something that I've ever experienced.
And we don't exactly,
I was close with my grandmother, but the rest of my relationships were like, oh, you've gotten so tall. Like that was the extent. So
thank you.
The show doesn't get into it as much, but the intro chapter of the book does get into the fact that Jason and Suki were raised by this woman.
Mm. Yes.
So.
Yeah, I think you get the sense of that. Yeah. Like, again, like efficiency of scene. Like, you get the sense that actually she raised them.
Just by the fact of that they have this, like, adult relationship together, yeah. It doesn't seem, mm-hmm. just like Elise said, it doesn't seem like a grandchild's grandparent. Yeah.
I would definitely have that conversation with my mom.
Yeah, so. 100%. Especially because she's like, oh my God, you'll never guess what happened today. And her grandma's like, you got a date?
Yeah.
So he's like, oh.
What do we feel about this Gram versus Dawson's Creek Grams?
I've never seen Dawson's Creek.
Oh my God. Okay. All right.
Well, how do you feel about it then?
I think that Gram is judgy and I don't really.
This feels like an evolution of that Gram. Like it does not feel like vastly different, but like just a slightly similar character.
I think she's way less controlling though.
Yeah.
I just felt like Grant in that show was very needed to control everything.
Anyway, next, again, another really short scene explains and introduces people. Very well done.
And I did want to point out in that grand introduction scene, she is reading one of the True Blood or the Stackhouse books.
Incredible. I didn't see it. I was like, I bet that's one of those books. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In the book, she's reading Danielle Steele, and I really think it's a fun change.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, the next morning, Mordet is dead. Jason is I should actually skip earlier than that. Suki is dressed as Lolita, sunbathing on.
This is one of the most iconic Suki Stackhouse looks, is the white cherry bikini. It is,
and it's directly from the book. She talks about this bikini. She talks about how it's her favorite. She talks about how it's looser this season than it was last year, and she's proud of herself.
And she's thrilled about that.
Suki is obsessed with sunning, and I relate so hard. Like, my main hobby in the summer is catching a tan.
As someone whose natural skin color is blue, I cannot agree. But...
Same.
And I think that, I mean, it's a great character trait that I like because I relate to it. But it's also like, this makes Suki the exact opposite of a vampire. Like, one of her purest joys in life is just basking in the sun. And even before we get deep into the story, we know that that's something that's important to her. She's doing it before she goes to work. Vampires obviously can't come out during the sun. So I wonder, like, how are they going to navigate this? What is going to happen?
Mm-hmm.
Will they have some odds to overcome?
Yeah, it instantly sets up some like pretty good organic conflict.
We don't get any vampire bracelets like in Vampire Diaries.
It's like that's fascinating. I'm not shocked at all that it's a book reference because I looked and I was just like, this is Lolita. What are we doing? It seems so random in the course of the rest of the show, but no, it's good to know
because she's not I don't think she's categorized as a Lolita like in general.
She's not a Lolita in any other way. It was just,
and I think also her age kind of also makes her not able to be one, even if she acted that way. I have never read Lolita, but I am very fluent in Korean long words, erotic 90s, in which she's going on right now, and she talks a lot about Drew Barrymore kind of as a Lolita in different roles, and it's just really interesting. I just find the whole concept really interesting.
90s Drew Barrymore. One of my many bisexual awakenings.
It's a really good podcast series. It's right in the middle of it now, if anyone's interested in that.
Nice. Anyway, so Jason comes and starts yelling at Sookie for getting into a fight with the rat trays. She basically doesn't take any shit from him. They go in to talk to their gran again, who tells them that Mordette is dead. Jason's incredible poker face again, holding up here, like, who, what, I don't know. I gotta go, bye. He then goes to work with a road crew, which, okay, like, includes Lafayette, who's obviously doing double duty as both a chef and on this road crew. And we also get to meet two other characters on this crew, Hoyt and Renee, who become more important later on in the show.
Oh, Hoyt. Yeah,
he doesn't do much in this episode, but just for future reference, I adore Hoyt Thornberry. I
do too.
A million percent.
Huge.
What a good boy.
I used to work at this like kind of fancy pants movie theater in West LA, where we actually got a lot of the True Blood cast in a lot of time, like while it was airing. Fun. And so like Ryan Kwanten would come in, the guy who plays Hoyt Fortenberry, I can't remember his name, but he came in once and I had like a full conversation with him in a dark theater because I didn't know who, because it was really dark, but we were talking about his like seating arrangement or whatever. And he was really, really nice, really, really, really tall. And I remember just being like, he looks vaguely familiar. And then when I saw him in the light, I was like, I was chatting up Hoyt the entire time. And I was just like beside myself because I love Hoyt so much. God. He was very sweet. Yeah.
Speaking of sexual awakenings, like big dumb guys who are good with their hands.
Yes. Baby. Climb.
Is Hoyt a himbo, maybe?
Oh, I think Hoyt is a himbo.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we'll get into himbo discourse shortly.
sorry to get ahead of myself.
Whilst we check through, the police also show up. We get Sheriff Andy. I can't remember the other older cop's name.
Sheriff
Bob Dearborn,
right?
Oh no, the
Dearborn,
sheriff's
Dearborn and Andy Belfler.
Yeah. Anyway, Jason, they're talking. Asking Jason some very basic questions about where he was and whether he knew Mordette. He just lies to them and then is immediately caught in the lie because he is not a smart boy and gets arrested.
Well, he didn't know he was being filmed by Mordette and they've already seen the film.
And as Jason himself says, he probably should have. He probably should have known.
He's if she's showing you a video that she fucked someone else, she's recording you too.
In the same same location
with hooks and chains.
Mm-hmm. That was some hot sex, though. I can't lie.
Yeah, agreed.
Anyway,
he's an idiot. Gets arrested, and Sookie is continuing to talk to her gran, who wants Bill to come and talk to the descendants of the glorious dead of the Civil War. Is this Confederate shit, guys?
Yes, okay. It is Confederate shit.
This is where I bring up the Wikipedia, or like the Fandomopedia, or whatever the fuck. Anyway, obviously they're in the South, so there's that. But the actual like description of this organization, it's not a real organization, but a social organization of elderly citizens of Bontem who had an interest in the family genealogies of the town and ancestors who served in the American Civil War. So the Wikipedia, and I assume that means the show, goes to lengths to not say specifically that they only care about Confederates.
Right.
Okay. So, like, if your family served on any side in the war, we would love to make your family tree.
In Louisiana.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. So, it's a little...
Just so happens that most of them are... 99% of them are going to be Confederate. Yeah.
So, anyway, very keen to, and this sets up an excellent scene shortly as well, I'm very keen to just talk to an old guy about the Civil War. Sookie is back at Malotte's, and Bill shows up again, and we get our first example of him not pronouncing her name as Sookie, but as Sookie. Bill asks if he can call on her at her house because he's an old doofus.
I love it.
And Sookie's like, yes, my gran really wants to meet you. Can you be doing me a favor? Not me, my gran a favor. And Bill is somewhat confused, but they agree to meet up after her shift at 1:30, when presumably her gran is, her gran waits up for her after her shift every night.
I think she does.
They have this conversation about, you know, making these plans. Okay, for one, I love that they are really using some, like, you know, mid-2000s ass music. Like, it sounds like the Queen of the Dam soundtrack when they're having this conversation. I fucking love it.
And the extreme close-ups.
Extreme close-ups. And the people are staring at them, and Bill's like, they're staring at us because I am vampire and you are immortal. You're immortal. And I'm like, that's not why. It's because the chemistry between you two is off the charts and it looks like you're about to fuck. So that's why people are
they
staring.
Like, just forgot that everyone else, except for the fact that they mentioned that they're being stared at, it's like no one else exists.
Right. And they drop everything out of the background when Sookie's with him. I just love it. It's good. So intense.
It is the literal when you came in, the air went out. Like, that is them translating the theme song. And very well done. Anyway, Bill leaves with the agreement to meet up at 1:30. Then we get Sam and Tara being fucking awful. Sam is
dragging, like, physically manhandling his employee. Somebody sue this man. Somebody sue him.
Seriously.
I don't like it.
And he's supposed to be, like, the nice guy, too. Which
He is Xander Harris.
He's totally Xander, yeah.
I think that when I first watched this, I probably thought he was the nice guy because it was 2008 and I was not as educated.
We know better
as
now. Yeah.
So, like, I think that I'm not worried because, like, we're going to do this pod and it's going to be great. But I think Sam is going to be a character that's not going to age well for me. Of all the characters. I'm a little concerned about that, but we'll get through
it. A lot of times, obviously. Like, the nice guy characterization when you are rewatching a show like this, like, for example, I am watching ER for the first time, and that show ran forever. So there are a lot of, like, 90s and early 2000s characterizations of men in that show where I'm just like, wow, y'all. I know what you think you were doing. But what I am seeing is not that. And that's definitely what's going on with Sam here, which is like, I know you think that you're like a nice guy hero, but like, this really is not it. Especially because he gets too close to Sookie and then she hears him.
But I think that's the difference with this is that because she hears him, she realizes just how fucking creepy he is.
Right. Like,
he screams at her theoretically about her being unsafe by going after the rat trays and not calling the police. She bursts into tears. He sort of goes to comfort her, and then he just starts smelling her and thinking about what she smells like.
It throws all of his motivations into a different light. Like, that shit's like, he's not protecting her for her own good. He's protecting her because he feels some sort of like ownership over her, some sort of like, this is the object of my desire. How dare she fraternize with anybody else?
And if it's not that, then he's just infantilizing her because he thinks that because she puts on this persona of, you know, airheadedness or dizziness or, you know, whatever she needs to do to protect the fact that she actually perceives too much, he acts like he needs to take care of her because of those things. And it's just like, either you're being overprotective because you're possessive and that's bad, or you're being overprotective because you think Sookie can't handle herself, but you still want to fuck her. So that's also bad.
And then Tara comes in and does exactly the same thing, and it's also infantilizing. And what's really interesting is the thing she overhears from Tara's mind is, oh, she's got such pretty eyes just like Jason's as well.
So this is bad. Between, like, what Sam and Tara are doing to Sookie is bad, but the three of them together in this, like, friendship relationship where it's just, there's too much said between them because of Sookie understands, and there's not enough said between them because Sookie hasn't told them. Well, Tara knows. But I just think it's so funny, the three of them together, and it only gets funnier.
Yeah. And it is interesting that Tara and Jason are the two who really know that Sookie really is a can read minds, and are the two who absolutely tell her not to do it with them. Like, they're the ones who don't sort of view it as a, maybe this isn't it a bit weird, maybe she reads mind, haha, she probably doesn't read minds. They're like, no, she does read minds, and she's just not to fucking do it with them.
And like from their perspective, I can totally get it too, because like even though they know like she can't control this, and she's, well, except in that one scene where she's like physically grabbing Jason intentionally trying to read his thoughts, but she can't help it. But also, like, even if she can't help it, it would still feel like a huge violation. Like if I knew somebody who was a telepath and then would catch these thoughts, I would, you know, I would also ask them, like, please do not. please do not make an effort or like try to put up whatever blockers you need to. But yeah, that would feel like a huge violation. So I do kind of get it from their perspective as well. And also, I just wanted to throw like a really quick shout out to Tara's arms, for which I will be building an altar later.
That's awesome. I had actually forgotten about the scene where she kind of like puts her, like, she almost, it's where she tries to read Jason's thoughts intentionally. It reminds me of something we talk about a lot about on my other podcast, Pod Wraiths, is Vulcans and mind melds, and how there are times when mind melds have been involuntary to one of the people involved in it. And like that happens in Star Trek VI, which is my favorite Star Trek film. Spock is like doing that to Kim Cattrall's character, and it's really upsetting and a violation. And the scene in the show really brought that up for me. So I've read it very similar to you, Tasia.
Mm-hmm. I think that you guys have the right read on it. But for me, when I was watching this, it's like, I feel... This is just like not a correct reading, but because Jason is just incapable of taking care of himself, I feel like Sookie is like, I do not blame Sookie for doing this, because she is the only, not the, grandma's very smart, but she's not involved in this. So the only person who is on Jason's side that could even remotely help him, because she has any amount of intelligence when it comes to law enforcement, is Sookie. So
like, she Jason's
needs,
idiot baby.
She needs to know the truth. And Jason is just too dumb to be out here by himself. I love you, you're handsome, baby. But you're stupid. Yeah.
I will say it made me think of the Vulcan stuff, but like I wasn't too upset about it.
Okay.
I think we need to say though that in terms of arms, we have to shout out Jason's arms. We also have to shout out Lafayette's arms. Mm-hmm. Top three arms of the episode.
Yeah. Everywhere. Take your shirt off.
Everyone is sweaty and hot in the South, and therefore their arms are on display.
Everyone was very sweaty in this episode. This show is very sweaty, and it just feels really accurate. Like, I appreciate
the humidity, man.
So... during this scene with the three of them fighting, Sookie says, you know, I am a grown woman. You know, I decide who I spend my time with. And this is where I compare this show to another show that I love called New Girl, where there is a character named Nick Miller. And there is an episode where they need to decide which of them gets to stay in this parking spot. And they say that Nick gets to decide who. And he has a breakdown in the middle of the episode. And he screams at them. And he says, I'm the decider. I decide. And that is all I could think about when Sookie was screaming at them. I'm a grown woman. I decide. So there you go. Nick Miller corner.
Sookie definitely has elements of Nick Miller, and of course her being a grown woman who decides what's good for her is immediately undercut by her waiting outside for Bill and getting beaten up by the rat chase.
Well, but the thing is like, it is a cliffhanger, just like Tasia said, like the episode ends and it's like, oh my god, what is gonna happen to Sookie? Bill is supposed to be meeting her, so like, did something happen to Bill? Is he just late? Like, what is...
Also, did Sam just go home and put on his like Beats by Dre headphones, noise canceling shit? Because he's literally like 50 feet away. And trailer walls are not that thick.
Very stealth. They can overwhelm a vampire. They can certainly overwhelm Sookie Stackhouse.
And Sookie is very a quiet person getting beaten down. Like, very quiet.
Yeah.
Very polite. She's aware of, you know, noise ordinances, I guess.
She was beaten up very politely.
Is she?
And that's our episode. We cut into an end credits song, which is Bones by Little Big Town, which was another fucking great song, I thought, in the episode. I had, like, The Chain by Fleetwood Mac vibes for this song. I don't know anything about this band or anything else they've done, but...
Little Big Town, they're a country band. They were pretty popular around this time. I assume they've I assume that they have continued to make music, although I don't know that for sure, because not much of their music has broken through the barrier between country music and me, that is my sister.
I definitely had the soundtrack to the first season on CD for this show before I decided that physical media was pointless and sold all my CVs, which was before I decided that physical media was not pointless and started buying
them. I actually bought a CD the other day and then realized I didn't have a place to play it because the CD player in my car has a phone, a cell phone like holder in it. Like, and I'm like, what the fuck am I gonna do? And one of my friends was like, just play it in your Blu-ray player. And I was like, oh yeah, that's a good idea.
It's me. Hi, I'm the friend. It's me.
It's laughing. I'm laughing because that's also the CD. I went to the Taylor Swift show and had to get the like Midnight's version that was only available at that weekend with an extra song, which I still haven't listened to.
I have multiple copies of the last like 2 or 3 Machine Gun Kelly albums on CD because you buy pre-order merch, it comes with a CD, you need like, the Target exclusive CD, so I have like I have CDs. I don't listen
the to only them. Reason I bought it was because our friend Ryan, who you guys will hear on this podcast eventually, asked me to pick one up for him, and it was only like $10, so I was like, I'll get one for myself too.
You're like, I'm getting one.
So that's our episode. I think we're going to probably, we got introduced to so many characters. We're probably not going to do big beats on all of them, but maybe just a couple of thoughts on 4 of our probably main characters from the episode. So who wants to talk about Sookie?
I think in summation, Sookie is a telepath. She is also like a deeply kind person, I think. We see how the people treat her, but we never see her treat anyone with really anything less than respect. And the only time she even snaps at anybody is because her friends are treating her like shit.
She treats the rat trays.
Well, they deserve it. They're not real. No real person involved.
They're not people.
Yeah.
But I think that another thing that's important to note is how like loyal Sookie is. Jason is suspected of murdering Madette, and Sookie's like, yeah, Jason's not a good person. He's a moron, but he is definitely not a murderer for sure. He didn't do this. Like, he didn't. Mm-hmm. And she just reads Bill's vibes and is like, yeah, he's not going to kill me either. It's fine.
I think what I appreciate the most about Sookie Stackhouse is that she demands respect from other people. Like you said, she is not, you know, she's not rude. She's not somebody who's going to go out and start fights, but she is going to demand that you treat her the way she knows she should be treated. And for a young woman of her age, that's really impressive, I think.
Yeah, and she has big, 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 strong feelings about, like, propriety. She does not want to be around any dirty talk.
No, she does not.
I don't necessarily think that she's, like, a prude per se, but, like, you definitely can't just be talking whatever around her. You have to.
I mean, she's surrounded by people constantly talking about sex, so I don't know how sustainable that is.
I was just thinking she wouldn't be comfortable on our podcast.
At least not in this episode. I think that we'll be able to mark a note where Sookie would be comfortable coming on and being a guest of the podcast.
Yeah, let's remember that comment and
put a pin in that one. Yeah.
I think the scene that's interesting for me with her is when she's talking to Bill. I think after rescuing him, and she's like, he says something like, "You're alone with a vampire. You know, vampires turn on people." And she says, well, some humans turn on people too, and I'm not an idiot. And she's holding a silver chain. But it also reminded me a little bit of like the scene when in Buffy, when Oz sort of again comes out as a werewolf, and Willow is like, you know, a few days a month, I'm not a very nice person to be around as well. And Oz is like, you are quite the human. And I felt like the sort of Oz reaction to that and the Bill reaction to Sookie there had sort of parallels.
Oz is the best boy.
Yes, he's a good boy. Any more thoughts on Sookie? Or we can move on to the, again, shy and diminishing Tara.
Tara is reading The Shock Doctrine by Naomi Klein. I was very excited about this. I've also read that book. That's all.
She was mixing whiskey sours for her grandma when she was young, and
Sam
Malott says that's fucked up. Yeah. Her mother, sorry, yes, and she's like, yeah, she fucks with everyone, like, just absolutely stitches people up left, right, and center. Lafayette calls her out immediately, saying like, you should not be working here. Sam has lost his mind. You do not work well with people. She's a force of nature, I think, is probably the best way to describe it.
Another woman in this show who demands respect, and mm-hmm. as it should be.
In a slightly more punchy way than Sookie mm-hmm. does.
I really enjoy the scene at her first job, where she's just like yelling at that lady, whatever. But when her stupid ass boss comes by, manager comes by, and she like, she just like puts them in a trap verbally, like that they cannot get out of. Because she's like, my baby daddy's gonna come and blah, blah, blah. And then they're all like, and she's like, you racist, I don't even have a child. And it's just, she's just gonna say whatever she wants to make you uncomfortable. And I just find that something that I could not do, because I am way too, like, I'm worried about being nice all the time. I'm not saying that I'm nice all the time, but I think about being nice all the time. And I just feel like I wish I could have a little bit of that. A
little bit of Tara.
Yeah. Named after a plantation.
Yeah. And it's so clear that Tara is just so much smarter than like 99% of the people around her. And that she, like, this town really is just too small for her. Like, she...
Yeah,
has so much potential, and she's stuck here, and you just really feel that for her. Like, she's got her ideas and her knowledge, her strengths are just like too big for this, you know, backwoods ass place, and she's just kind of stuck there. And like, so we, you know, anybody would be mad at the world too.
I mean, she's reading a book about disaster capitalism. I mean, she has like big ideas.
Literally just before the 2008 financial crash as well.
Right. Yeah. That's true.
Melissa, anything on Tara, or do you want to move on to Jason's?
No, I think that we've covered Tara. I mean, I love her. Jason Stackhouse. I mean, what else is there to say about poor Jason? He is pretty. He is dumb.
Yep.
Looking at him is like looking into my dog's eyes, where it's just like, you know, there's nothing going on back there. Like, when I look into my dog's face, her beautiful stupid face, and all I can picture is just like a single ball bouncing on a white backdrop. Like, that's all that's happening in there, and that is Jason Stackhouse.
It feels like he has a lag. Like, it takes, you can visually see him processing anything anyone says to him.
Oh my god.
Which is another thing, like, Tara, he's
restating everything anyone says to him back aloud in his brain.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what a dumb idiot. I love him so much.
So in terms of himbo discourse, which we did touch on earlier with Hoyt, so I pulled this up from the internet.
The interwebs.
So this is our definition of a himbo discourse, and which is why, not my definition, it's I stole it, but of why Jason Stackhouse is not a himbo. Okay, a himbo must be kind, beefy, and stupid. Jason Stackhouse is beefy and stupid, but he is not kind. So if you are kind and beefy, you are a hunk. If you are beefy and stupid, you are a jock. Jason Stackhouse is a jock. If you're kind and stupid, you are apparently a decent mouse. I don't know who that mouse is.
I'm going to post this little meme when I post the episode. I'll put this.
That's Bernard from Rescuers, by the way. Okay.
And then our core king himbo is Kronk from The Emperor's New Groove, which I agree, Kronk rules. The Emperor's New Groove rules.
Himbo blueprint.
Do you think that Disney's Hercules is a himbo?
Hercules is a himbo, yes. Hercules is also a himbo.
Hopefully next time we're back, Elise will have watched Emperor's New Groove. Yeah.
I have seen Hercules. Within the last few years, actually. I feel like it was of the years where I missed so a lot of Disney. I don't know what's Disney and what's not, to be honest, from that era, because I was like probably in college or something. But I will watch The Emperor's New Groove, I promise.
Report back.
Mm-hmm. I shall.
I agree. Hercules is definitely a himbo.
Mm-hmm.
And not Jason.
Not about Himbo discourse so much, but I think one of my favorite things about Jason is he's just so easily influenced. Mm-hmm. Like, he will let someone talk him into anything, and I just think that's really sweet and stupid and great. It just makes me laugh so much.
And then finally, Vampire Bill, who I will not be calling Bill Compton. I will be exclusively calling Vampire Bill. Sorry about that. Deal with it.
I mean, you're supposed to. It's fine. I feel like right now he's just mysterious. We don't really know that much about him.
He has strong season one Buffy angel vibes, I feel like.
Right. Mm-hmm. I feel like the summary
largely useless and in the background.
The summary from Wikipedia had his age, but I don't think we really even know that in the show yet. Like, we don't really know like how long he's been alive or any of that.
No, although we do, like, we know he's old because her grandma was like, was he alive during the Civil War? Sort of stuff.
Well, yeah, and so he said
that they don't know. Yes. Yeah,
so they didn't say yes. There was no answer to that yet.
Well, she hadn't told him what the actual favor was yet. Oh, that's what they were supposed to talk about.
Yeah,
she hadn't even brought it up to him yet. Yeah. So we still, at this point, don't even know if he was alive in the Civil War or if he was in the area. You know, he could have been in Europe or something during that
time. And what's interesting, here's an interesting book change, is that Bill doesn't ask Sookie if he can call on her until whatever spoiler-free resolution of this rat tray beating is.
Okay.
So that's like pulled up so that we get it in the first episode, which I think is good, because you want to know that there is going to be some like forward motion with these two.
But you also kind of want it to be like in a quiet time, like it's not an emotionally charged, other than the fact that they're horny as fuck for each other. Like, you want it to be in that quiet time, not off the back of a saving or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Like the end of Speed, where they're like, relationships after high intense things don't work out, or I don't remember the exact quote, but
I think that's pretty close. Honestly,
it's a good movie.
Yeah, it is. Should we talk about spoilers if we're done with our character?
Yeah, unless anyone's got anything else to say from the episode, there is one point when after Sookie saves him and then protects her neck with silver, Bill is like, it's not your only artery. There's a particularly juicy artery in the groin that I'm a fan of. And she's like, I am a lady and you should not talk to me like that.
That nearly feels
I'd be
out
like
of
opening
character
my legs,
for Bill. I know.
It does. Yeah, I agree.
He's like intentionally pushing buttons to find out where her boundaries are and to see how much she will stand up to him.
Yeah, that's fair. I'd be like, okay, let's go. But I'm a little sluttier than Sophie.
Aren't we all?
Well, we can't read people's minds, so.
That's true, yeah.
We have a big benefit in the slut department.
Yeah. We should talk about, like, the horny section is the slut department.
I feel like a lot of the stuff that we talked, that we were going to, like, talk about in those two sections, we kind of already discussed.
Yeah, we've covered.
And we did a little book stuff also.
But yeah, Tasia, are there like specific spoilers you would like to talk about for this episode in terms of the rest of the show or the book?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the Bill stuff, Bill being allowing himself to be led outside and allowing not meeting Sookie during their planned time was all intentional. And you don't get like the source of all of this until I think seasons later even, but where you find out that he was intentionally sent to Bontemps to seduce Sookie because she's part fairy or whatever, and they want her abilities or whatever it was, like the vampire royalty of the area. So he intentionally got himself caught in a trap because he wanted them to exchange blood, because he wanted that connection that exchanging blood provides. So it is really fucked up that he, you know, we can talk all day about him his reasons, you know, trying to be polite or whatever for getting let outside. But really, it was all just part of his plan to ensnare Snooki. Snooki? Hello, Jersey Shore. to ensnare her.
That's why he offers her to have some of the blood, right? Which she turns down.
Yeah. And so that's what makes me like less inclined toward Bill, is just knowing that like this is all set up.
It's funny because I forgot all of that, but without remembering all of that, I'm still less into Bill than I was originally. And I think it's just in general knowing like how things progress,
right? And I know who's coming, and I know that there is no
the who's coming is like my favorite bit in the books too. Like we're in spoiler section, so I'm just going to say, like, she's with Eric for a really long time in the books.
That's the wildest part about the books is that she's only with Bill in one book. They break up, and then they never get – and then Bill is just a background. He shows up every now and then throughout the rest of the series. Yeah. She spends most of these books essentially married to Eric. Mm.
Yeah. Yep.
But – yeah, exactly. And that's I do want to reread these because I want that little – nugget of happiness they have for a second. But there are a couple of other the chain thing, when she throws the chain and it wraps around what's his Max neck and squeezes on its own. That Mr. is another and Mr. Rattray, to use the formal moniker. That is also something that is just not explained for years, for seasons, and it's just wild because I remember thinking about that, I mean, for years, and just being like, but will they ever explain how and why that chain tightened on its own? And they just don't until years later, which is, absolutely wild.
Yeah, like, just, if you don't know anything. It was like
Bill doing it or something.
I
was like, is this physics? Like, what's happening here?
Yeah.
You can definitely tell that this TV show was being created at a different time in TV because the fairy thing, we don't find out about it until, like, season 4, and it's, like, it's the thing of the show. So it's very obvious that the people who are working on True Blood knew that they were going to have multiple seasons to tell whatever stories that they wanted to. Because if this was like a Netflix first season, we would have had that.
You have to put all the cards on the table. Scene
in the first episode.
Well, because you're not going to get beyond season 3 anyway. So
we live in a culture of like early TV cancellations and nobody really knowing if you're going to get to finish your project. And also we also live in a culture of instant gratification, and so it's kind of hard to sit on something like that and expect your audience to be able to hold that attention span and be like, we're still thinking about this chain that wrapped around his neck years later.
And when you find things out later, like, I think that's great. It, like, as long as it makes sense, I'm like, I love when they build on what they've shown us already. Like, I just think it's interesting.
Especially because I don't remember feeling like, and I was obviously a very different TV watcher when I watched this for the first time, but I honestly don't remember feeling like I was missing information about Bill. No. I do remember feeling like it was kind of a shock and like a, oh shit, like the recontextualization. But I think that it will be interesting to kind of look at this with the knowledge and both from like a first time viewer perspective, if we could a little bit, because we were able to pick out this question of like, how did they trap Bill? And it's like, we were able to figure out plausible deniability that this would have actually happened to Bill. And yet we are all going to be able to point at this, and I'm sure a bunch of other things, once we finally get into the reveal that like, oh, okay, well, it wasn't exactly like a plot hole, you know, TV convenience, as much as we would have just forgiven that because we're watching a really fun television program.
Yeah.
My only other spoiler thing I noted was a couple of times you see an old dog running around. Suki describes it as, that's just some old dog that hangs around here who wants me to throw him a bone. Accurate.
That dog
is Sam-A-Lot.
Fucking Sam-A-Lot.
The scene where the dog's like just kissing her on the face, I'm like, Jesus. Like, it's sweet, but I'm like, it's gross.
Gross. It's sweet. Because if it's a dog, it's gross because it's Sam-A-Lot.
Yeah. Ideally, you want your, you know, the person whose face you're licking to have informed consent on the matter. She does not know that it is, in fact, Sam-A-Lot licking her face.
No, she thinks it's just a dog.
Yeah. It's a very, very different thing. Different kind of dog entirely. The only other thing was that I noted was more of an Easter egg, I think, than anything else, which was Jason wearing the panther hat. Because later on he becomes a werepanther.
Yes. That shit was crazy.
Oh my god. Okay, crazy show. I cannot wait. Yeah.
They're definitely seeding a lot of things really early, and I love when a show does that because it makes it too rewarding on a rewatch.
Just well, also, the rewarding things we get to see around then are Alcide and...
Oh god, I just remembered the scene where she throws up in his shoes.
Okay, is that us pretty much wrapped up?
I think it is.
Awesome.
So.
Does everyone want to do quick plugs and then we'll do a quick goodbye?
Yeah.
Yes.
Elise, do you want to go first?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter, Letterboxd, and Storygraph at chicken_tendi. That's T-E-N-D-I. You can find my other podcast, Podwraiths, a Deep Space Nine rewatch podcast, on Twitter and Instagram at Podwraiths. That's Podwraiths. And wherever you listen to podcasts.
Melissa?
Yeah, mostly you can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Mellow Yellow. I'm also on Blue Sky at Mellow Yellow. And that's it.
Tasia?
You can find me mostly on Instagram at Ragey Cakes, and you can also find my other podcast, Act Ya Age, that's Y-A Age, on Instagram and Twitter at Act Ya Age, and wherever you get your podcasts.
And I'm on Twitter at Mean Englishman, although perhaps Blue Sky soon, more likely at Ozymandias. And you can find me looking for joy and inspiration from Isaac Asimov on the Asimov cast. Next week will be the first taste. Until then, I'm Lozzie, and my blood type is old dog that hangs around.
I'm Melissa, and my blood type is hoe for sickly looking men.
My name is Tasia, and my blood type is Tara Thornton's arms.
And I'm Elise, and my blood type is the pussy that scares George W. Bush.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
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 We did it.